How do you do?
Hey, how's it going? How are things over in Austin?
Pouring down rain. I mean, nobody in Texas complains about rain in the spring, right?
Well, that's what I do here. Yeah, well, I'm in sunny Florida, and we don't like rain here.
Oh, yeah, you don't get too much of it.
Yeah, we do. It's like every other day. There's a saying here, if you don't like the weather, just wait 20 minutes. Yeah. Well, hey, I'm real stoked to talk to you today. We absolutely love your new CD. Oh gosh. Let me tell you something. And Anna Marie's here too. We listened to your CD about, I want to say 10 times now. We can't wrap our head around the fact that you were able to put together something that to us, you know, sounds like part Bakersfield, maybe a little bit of the Allman Brothers, you know, and still it sounds so fresh and contemporary. It doesn't sound retro. It doesn't sound like a throwback. You know, it sounds like just this new, awesome music. And I can't figure out how the heck did you do that?
Well, you know, I don't know if I have a real answer for that or not really, but you know, I really do admire the resurgence of another wave of modern traditionalists in country music.
Yeah.
But I will say that I can be a little cranky about people that are trying to be too what they perceive as authentic, you know, like you don't have to copy music that came a couple of decades before to be doing it right. Well, the real way to make art correctly is to do it honestly, you know, and mine your own personal experience, however quote unquote weird that may be, and just try to be as honest about it as you possibly can. And, you know, I think that tips the cap to the tradition of country music in particular, which has always been lyrically about people just telling stories about their own lives. You know, the best country music songs that we've ever heard, like Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You, is a great example of that. It's as though she wrote a greeting card, you know, and you even hear the story from her about how she wrote that song. You know, she wrote that song in 5 minutes just as an apology to a friend and coworker. Yeah. You know, it's just a real story from her life.
Yeah. It was to Porter Wagoner. I know, because I love that song. I love all the versions of that song, by the way. And she said that it was like her, you know, her parting words to Porter, because, you know, really broke her heart to have to leave, you know, that whole situation, because he helped her so much. I mean, clearly. And, you know, this was her way of saying, hey, you know, I still love you and you're still important to me, but, you know, it's time for me to move on, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just amazing. So would you classify yourself as a, in terms of your songwriting, do you write from just being a casual observer of life, or do you write from deep personal experience, or would you say it's a little bit of both?
I have to write from personal experience, or I'm unable to access the sort of level of honesty that I'm talking about. That being said, all these true stories are lies at the same time to make them sound more interesting. You know, and it's up to the listener to try to figure out what's the truth and what's the lie. But ultimately, you know, poetry is, when poetry is working correctly, it's like page after page of images that sort of point the direction that the writer or the thinker or the mission of the piece wants the listener or the reader to go, to try to find some feeling that you couldn't either put into words or define with the music. You know, you're trying to shoot for something that is other than something that you could tell with words and other than something that you could tell with music. You know, I mean, that's the magic of music, is you are able to pair lyrics with music that sets an emotional stage to point toward an experience that an individual has had that is impossible to put into words.
Right. Now, you know? Is there a song on this album that you feel really encapsulates what you just said, where it really all works together. I mean, of course, in theory, they all do. But there's always that one song, I really believe, on any album that you're kind of like, you know, that really encapsulates everything for me.
Well, they all sort of work. They all do different jobs. You know, altogether, a record sort of has a thing to say that is larger and more overarching, like a novel. You know, like what, you know, what does your favorite novel really say? Well, it says a lot of things,
right?
You know, but I can say that each of the songs sort of serves an individual purpose. Like, I really like the song Sister Elizabeth that starts the record. I really admire on records that I deeply love, a thesis song. Which is often the first or the second track that sort of defines the whole mission of the album. You know, if there's one song that encapsulates everything that happens on the whole album, it would be Sister Elizabeth.
Great. Let's hear that song right now.
Sister Elizabeth in her habit to receive the day's bereaved. She knocked the hinges off the door so we can't hold her anymore. Sister Elizabeth wears a crooked smile beneath the slasher red. Sister Elizabeth with the golden hair down hanging by her bed. Meet up back down the alley where you find her giving hand. Not so much alone as caught between the hammer and the stone, but she'll get by. She'll get by. She'll get by. Sister Elizabeth to the shops to buy the things to make her day. Sister Elizabeth shined the penny she picked up along the way. So much alone as caught between the hammer and the stone. She'll get by. She'll get by. She'll get by. Pleasant is the valley where we pray. Sister Elizabeth, never weary, none for nothing anyway. So I let her take me down, only to find she ain't around. But not so much alone. Sister Elizabeth lights a candle in the hotel by the highway. Sister Elizabeth lights a candle in the hotel by the highway.
And by the way, that's my favorite song on the album, because I really hear, I don't know, your guitar guy.
Guitar guy is a guy named Sweet Gary Newcomb.
He is just phenomenal. He reminds me, like, the guitar licks on that song reminds me of, like, Dickie Betts, you know, and Dwayne, you know. It's just amazing. So
I can tell you one thing. The quality of the players that exist here in Austin, Texas is incomparable. I know there are a lot of really great pickers in Nashville, but there's a culture of playing that happens here in Texas that allows for so many individual artists to get so good at the unique thing that it is that they do. Everybody just, well, before this pandemic, everybody went out and played in public every night of the week, like every night of the week, sometimes 3 and 4 gigs a night. And when you play that much, you develop a language that is uniquely yours. And Gary is a really great example of that.
My gosh, wow. So what are you guys doing now? I mean,
you know, I don't know. Like, I'm not one that's been really into the live streaming thing.
Yeah.
It's not what I got into music for, so I haven't done it very much. I got into music because it's a communal act. I got into music because I liked being around the other interesting people that made music. I like being in the environments that are created by groups of people making music. I like that music is created by people being together. Like, you know, my earliest memories of music are the instruments come out after dinner at the dinner party. Like, when I was a kid, like, that's before music was capitalized and before records were sold. Music was something that happened in the evenings, in those precious few moments in people's busy work lives where they had a moment to take themselves away. And, you know, people with a piano in their living room, you know, after dinner, when it was dark, you know, when people didn't have electric lights and screens to keep them occupied and television, families would sing, you know, and that's what really attracts me to music, is that togetherness. And now in the situation that we're in, it's really hard to see how that's going to happen again, you know?
Right, right.
But it will happen again.
No, absolutely. I totally agree with you. I grew up very much the same way. I mean, my folks are church people, and that's what you did, you know, especially Sunday afternoons after church. You just hung out and you sang and you played instruments, and that's just the way it was. So I'm very curious, Jesse, since you shared this experience with me, is there a point that you can pin back, you know, to, you know, this is when I totally decided I wanted to do this for a living? Is there, like, a point in the past you can?
Yep, I remember it vividly. Right. And the song, The New Mission Bell is sort of about that. The New Mission Bell is sort of a love song to music in general. My parents are of the hippie generation and went to college. But my folks had a farm and did a lot of subsistence farming, you know, 2.5-acre vegetable garden that was all planted in a rainbow. We kept cattle for the as overflow for the our neighboring prison dairy farm in northwestern Virginia. So we kept cattle for them in the wintertime when our barns were too full, and we had hogs and chickens and geese and stuff like that. And my folks would go to these great summer solstice parties, summer in central Pennsylvania. And, you know, the adults would get all kind of loose and wound out, especially along about sundown. And the guitars would come in, and the kitchen would be full of bikers singing Grateful Dead songs and country music. And I remember a moment that a harmonica player started handing me harmonicas, and every time the song changed, you know, I was probably 6 or 7. Every time the song changed, he'd hand me a harmonica that was in the correct key. And I was blown away because I was able to participate. So, you know, those are the moments that I'm always trying to get back to as a band leader. I'm always trying to make it feel like we're all together, and the way we celebrate being together is we make music together.
That is so epic. And so you had mentioned the song New Mission Bell. We're going to hear that right now.
Rolling down the line.
an epic experience to have, you know, and kind of, it sounds like you've kept that really deep inside of you, that first initial experience that really told you you wanted to do this for a living. And it sounds like you try to maybe reach back to that, you know, now and again. Would you say that's accurate? That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Well, we had a couple of questions from our listeners, and you know, they found out that I was going to interview you. So I hope you don't mind if I ask. Just, you know, they're all peachy. Don't worry. You know, it's a family show. Yeah, they tend to be pretty cool. So okay, so the first question that was sent in is, you were the bass player for HB, you know, Heartless Bastards, and they wanted to know if that band is still together and what's going on.
Well, you know, the band, quote unquote, went on break a few years ago, 225 shows a year for 10 years or something, and we got to a point where, you know, everybody was kind of lost. We didn't know why we were doing it anymore. So we took a break, and I started doing this, and it took off a life of its own. Eric made a solo record, and I recorded on that record with her. So I was engaged with her in the Heartless Bastards music the whole time. And then she made a second album that she's just finished, and I've played on that one too. I was not probably going to go back out on tour and do the live shows because I'm so involved in doing this now, and it's so rewarding. But my relationship with Erica is quite strong, and we're still making music together. But her musical personality is so strong that if anybody's missing Heartless Bastards, just go find those Erica Wennerstrom solo records, and it'll scratch the same itch, I promise you.
All right, awesome. Another question. So one of our listeners said that they had read somewhere that your band was going to be on ACL, Austin City Limits, and they wanted to find out if there was a date for that.
Oh, yeah. We did take a booking for the ACL festival. If it's still going to happen, which I doubt it will, we're scheduled to play on the 10th of October.
Okay. Okay. Well, everything's probably been pushed back though because of, you know, COVID-19,
yeah. Right? Yeah, we'll see. You know, I'm not holding my breath.
okay.
Yeah. No. We've got to deal with collectively, you know, politically and health-wise in this country. Yep. To really worry too much about whether or not we're going to get to go to the music festival. So, you know, it breaks my heart and it takes my career and kind of throws it in the trash can, which is really difficult for me to deal with emotionally, you know, thinking that I'm probably not going to be able to play a live gig for like 2 years. But I have my health.
Yeah. And you have your art too, and it can be an incredibly productive time as well. So there's, you know, and you're out and about because I remember when we first connected, you said you were going to go hiking that week and, you know, things like that. So that's awesome. You know, so you're keeping yourself sane and healthy, which is needed. Absolutely.
And exercise is so, so important, you know, that blood flow.
Oh, I totally agree with you. So another question that one of our listeners had was, they had also, I guess they're from Eastern Kentucky, and they said that you were in, in a band, a bluegrass band maybe. So is that correct? Yeah. What was the name of the band?
The name of the band, I won't say was, because we still get together and play every couple of years. The band is called the Kenton County Regulators. Named for Kenton County, K-E-N-T-O-N, which is a northern Kentucky county, which is sort of in the greater Cincinnati area, just south of the Ohio River. I lived up there for maybe 15 years or something like that. And Andy King and Brad Meinerding and Shane Gosney and a bunch of guys, we all played a lot of bluegrass music. There was a year that we played six nights a week. And you know, one of the reasons that I started writing songs at all is to sort of make an apology to that band and those guys. The band was so great and our rapport was so special. I feel really guilty that we never made an album, which we definitely should have. Because nobody was brave enough to be a songwriter in the group. We all did traditionals. So as a tip of the hat to them, I started writing these songs and it sort of bloomed and took off. And actually this week I'm involved in a, you know, email video project with a couple of the guys from the bluegrass band, one of whom is still in Cincinnati and one is now in Anchorage, Alaska. And we're trying to assemble some music videos together this week as though we were performing together, which has been pretty fun.
That's awesome. That sounds epic. You were able to retain those relationships, you know, as well.
Yeah.
You know, I do hear a little bit. I mean, I hit just a tad bit of bluegrass on the CD, Jesse, just a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I'm hearing some of the pictures. So, you know, and speaking of which, I did want to ask, you know, on the CD, what is the one song that you think you're, I don't know, maybe kind of speaks to where you're at now in life? Is there a song like that on the CD?
Trying to learn to be a songwriter and trying to learn about the sort of architecture of songs and how they're put together and is a pretty long and daunting process of trial and error. And I think the most successful song that sort of illustrates my capability as a writer right now on the new record is How You Make a Fool, which is the title track.
Right.
It's a very simple song and it's pretty spare and pretty bare bones. There's not a lot to it, but I did sort of identify a perspective and a simple architecture in writing that song that was sort of a watershed moment for me in learning how to craft songs that I felt were handsome, which is an unusual word to use for a song. But, you know, balance counts for a lot in a song. Yeah, there's a lot of elements that are all in play that all need to be sort of on the same level when you look at it and think, well, maybe that's done. And How You Make a Fool is one that achieved a particularly sort of poetic balance when it was finished. And it's one that I'm quite proud of. It, and it's, you know, it's a touchstone for me. I've moved beyond it now as a writer, I like to think. But it's a good example of a place, like something that I was shooting for that I achieved, that I was then able to use as a stepping stone to move beyond.
Great. So let's hear it right now.
Thank you. really you. That's how you made a fool. That's how you made a fool. That's it.
It's all about telling untruths.
Pretty much, right?
Lying to yourself.
Yeah, I totally hear you. So what is something that no one knows about you, Jesse? Only the closest to you might know. Nothing that, you know, might incriminate you.
No.
I don't have any confessions, please.
I don't think that oftentimes musicians sort of get rewarded for being healthy.
Yeah.
But I quit drinking a few years ago, something like that. I discovered swimming for exercise, which living in a hot climate in Texas, exercising in the summertime can be challenging and sometimes dangerous. So I started swimming laps at the YMCA, and in the quarantine, I have to say, one of the things I miss the most is being able to go every other day to the YMCA to swim a mile. So yeah. I swim four or five miles a week.
Oh gosh, yeah, that's awesome. So my question, because you shared this with me, and I'm, you know, hey, I am just so happy for you, because I know that is tough. It can be so tough. But as a songwriter, the new level of clarity that I'm just guessing that you must feel now that you're, you know, sober. Can you kind of share with me the differences that you see now? You know,
the biggest difference, I mean, there's a lot of benefits to just getting cleaned up, you know, and happiness is definitely one of them. You know, the voice inside your head that tells you that you're not good enough and you probably shouldn't try. Is pretty loud when you're using, and when you stop, it gets pretty quiet and you get bored. And so you can do more. But I have to say that the biggest benefit is I have my memory back. Like, I remember what happened 2 weeks ago, and I remember what happened 2 years ago. And things that even happened back when I was running wild and crazy are starting to come back in a way that they weren't there before. So it's like I was running wild for most of my life, and a lot of it was just sort of gone. And in my day-to-day life, I wasn't able to use all those experiences because I just couldn't remember them. But, you know, now I'm a little more clear-headed, and, you know, I can see the positive things that happened to me in my past, and I can see the negative things that happened to me in my past. And I can use all those things like tools in a toolbox, you know, instead of them just being inaccessible.
Jesse, was that the toughest lesson you've learned in your life in terms of, you know, getting sober? I mean, when you're thinking back, you know, what was actually the toughest lesson that you've learned, you know, thus far?
You know, I have to say that it wasn't hard for me to stop. I got to a place where I just felt like the next chapter of my life needed to begin. And that was the only way it was going to begin. And so when it began, it wasn't, I hate to say it, but it wasn't all that difficult for me. And, you know, day to day, it is kind of hard being locked in a house. Like, we got a big old cabinet here in the house, and bored, long, bored afternoons. You know, sometimes I feel a little twinge of want when I walk by a great bottle of bourbon that's been sitting there for a year. You know, and I think, wouldn't it be nice? And then I sort of take stock and I'm like, well, no, because I know me. And if I have a sip, things are going to go off the rails. And I don't want to go back there. So, nah, you know. So hats off to all the people that work as hard as they possibly can to make it work for themselves. And I don't want to minimize anybody else's experience whatsoever, because I know it is not easy. But I have to say that when I got to that place in my life where I needed for it to happen to me, it was not a hard decision for me to make.
Right. No, I totally get it. You know, and since you've been on this journey for a couple years now, from what you shared with me, Jesse, do you, you know, now when you think back, do you feel that you have, you know, any words of wisdom, you know, towards anyone that might be going through this journey right now? Maybe they're still trying to find it, they're still trying to do this. What would you say now that, you know, again, a couple years into this now?
Yeah, just do it now. And there's never, you know, nobody ever thinks that there's quite the right time, you know, for quitting smoking or whatever. Like, oh, I'll stop tomorrow. No, man, don't stop tomorrow. I can promise you that guaranteed 100% everything will be better. So just do it today. You know, clock's ticking. You get one shot at life. When you get to the end of it, that's it. You know, and you know, every day that you put off doing something healthy for yourself is a day that you just lose. You're never going to get it back.
Yeah, I totally hear you. Now, how would someone that's a musician in a band, you know, who's out there and, you know, the fans buy you shots, they buy you drinks. How, you know, what do you do to kind of manage that, you know, incessant temptation that comes with, you know, being someone in a band?
You know, it can be hard. You know, a musician is supposed to be responsible for everybody having a good time.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're out playing 5-6 nights a week, you have to remember that the people that have come to see you probably only go out once a week, once every other week, once a month, you know, and it's a big deal for them to be out and they're going to throw a big party. But you can't live that life day to day. So you just sort of have to learn how to align yourself with their expression of goodwill and encourage them to have a really good time and help them have a really great time and, you know, relieve some of the stress of their life. And just sort of, you know, when they approach you and demand for you to do shots with them or whatever, you just sort of learn how to really politely foil them, you know, not to put them down. I don't want to put them down, you know, and they're all just having a blast, you know, but you just sort of learn how to be gentle and be gracious and let them know that you had to do this last night and you got to do it tomorrow night too. And, you know, when you make people understand that, they scratch their head and they go, oh yeah, there's no way I could do this 2-3 days in a row, you know, and they're like, okay, and they move on.
That's cool. That's awesome. That's really good advice. So, you know, you've been in the business for a while and, you know, this is, oh gosh, I just love this album. I can't stop bragging about this album. It's just, I'm just so grateful that there are, you know, brilliant people like you still make music out there and just really putting out quality music. I'm a fan of, you know, traditional and classic country music. And when I hear something like this that just hugs everything, but it's still fresh, it's just, to me, it's mind-boggling and amazing. And if you could patent this, you should.
Yeah. Into the patent office, so if anybody copies one without asking me, they're going to get it.
Because this is a thing, absolutely. And so I would love to hear your insights on, if you were on a deserted island, what songs would you like? What 5 albums really would you take with you? I mean, which 5 albums? Remember, you're on a deserted island. You know, you're not going to have access to a lot of resources. Which 5 albums would you have to have with you?
Well, I've sort of looked through my collection. I'm sitting in my living room now. There's about 1,000 LPs in this room that I've collected over the course of my life. You know, and I tried to think of 5 off the top of my head that I've listened to more than any others. You know, I'm playing bluegrass music. I've got this great Stanley Brothers are the first singing duo that I really fell
Oh, yeah.
Hard.
Sure.
And the early recordings of the Stanley Brothers, I've got a couple of different collections of records. You know, those recordings were made on 78s, but sure. By the time they got to me, one of the early LPs I have is the Richer Tone collection of 78s, Rich R Tone, which you can find on the streaming services. But those Carter and Ralph singing together just sound like something that was beamed to Earth from outer space. It sounds like the Smithsonian Folkways collection, anthology of American folk music that was compiled by Harry Smith, has been a collection of recordings that I'm constantly going back to and referencing, just to sort of know where the seed of American recorded folk pop music sort of comes from. And so much of what exists in this anthology of American folk music is still in the music that we make today and listen to. You know, it's the building blocks. So the Smithsonian Folkways Anthology of American Folk Music is really, really important to me.
Awesome.
Let's see. I've got Leon Russell's second record, which is called Leon Russell and the Shelter People. If you don't know Leon Russell, run to find out who Leon Russell is. He just died a couple of years ago. Band leader from Oklahoma. Member of the Wrecking Crew, but got fired for being too stoned or something like that. Pretty crazy guy. You know, he led the band for Joe Cocker on the Mad Dogs and English.
Wicked pianist. I mean, just a wicked pianist.
He's great. This Leon Russell and the Shelter People record, I think the very first song I ever learned the lyrics to when I was, you know, about 7 years old or 9 years old was Stranger in a Strange Land, which is the first song on Leon Russell's second album.
Wow, awesome.
I really like a group called the Latin Playboys.
Latin Playboys.
Side project of the guys in Los Lobos, a couple of the guys in Los Lobos in the early 90s, I think, had a cassette tape, 8-track, sort of bedroom cottage project that they called Latin Playboys. And the first Latin Playboys recording really gave me a clue into how you could put sound together in interesting ways and call it music. And it was, you can really hear the process of the recording in the music. And it was something that turned me on and really made me want to learn how to record, because I could see the sort of pieces as how they put them together. And David Hidalgo is such a soulful guitar player and singer. It's just undeniable. So that first Latin Playboys record. And my guilty pleasure is the Norman Luboff Choir sings Songs of the West.
What?
The Norman Luboff Choir was a men's choir. I think they're from Dallas. But they put out a series of records on Columbia in the 50s, and 60s, doing, you know, mostly standards, show tunes, stuff like that. But there's a really fantastic album of cowboy tunes, Bury Me Not on the Lone Prairie, Old Chisholm Trail, Red River Valley, Whoopie Tally-I-O, stuff like that.
All the classics.
Choir of about 20 guys singing, and it's got this beautiful West Texas cattle ranch photograph on the cover. It's something I put on every once in a while. It's definitely the guilty pleasure album. Norman Luboff Choir sings Songs of the West.
That's amazing. I've never heard of these people. I'm going to have to go look it up. There's two Latin Playboys. I don't know much about them either, actually. Hidalgo, I do know about his, you know, craftsmanship, but I don't know about that particular band.
There are two Latin Playboys albums. One's just called Latin Playboys, and the other one is called Dos, for obvious reasons. They're both on the streaming services, so you can hop on there right away. Let me see if I've got a favorite song. Crayon Sun is a pretty great song. It's an odd record. There's a lot of like sort of musical segues and interludes, pieces of street music that they wove into the project and stuff. So you kind of have to listen to the whole thing all at once. And then, you know, there's four or five songs that pop out. It's just brilliant little sketches that are really touching. Often makes me weep.
Gosh, it sounds so cool. I can't wait to just, when we hop off of this call, I'm just going to go ahead and yeah, I'm not kidding. I'd love to hear about, you know, cool things like that. So, you know, obviously, you know, we, you know, spent some time talking about, you know, your latest effort and, you know, some of the things that you've done in the past. And I was wondering, Jesse, if there was anything that we haven't covered that you would love to share with the people that are listening right now that are really digging, you know, How You Make a Fool and digging your music and, you know, probably wanting to know a bit more about you. So is there anything that you would like to share that you'd like people to know about you and your craftsmanship?
The only thing that I'd like for people to know is please be patient with me and my aversion to social media.
Right.
Social media is a really sort of nasty place to be, especially right now. Mm-hmm. With so much misinformation being actively pushed by people that have narrow views of all sorts. It's a really unhealthy place to be. And I know as a society, we have not learned how to navigate that environment. And so I tend to sort of stay out of it, especially now more than ever, which is a little to my own detriment.
Right.
Having released an album, you know, I should be on social media pushing the record. But I find that I'm a much happier person if I stay away. I'm not able to open my Instagram account or look at my Facebook account just to post something. You know, it always comes with some scrolling. And then I always see something that upsets me. And I just have to stay away. So I've been pretty quiet on social media. And I would suggest to people to be patient. And if you like record, please share it with somebody else that you think would like the record. You don't have to post it about it on social media. Just text somebody a Spotify link. If you think they're going to like it, just shoot them a link and say, hey, check this out. I think this is your jam.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. We've gotten to like putting together these lists so that we only see tweets from people from certain accounts.
That's a good idea.
It's scary. Some of the things out there are very just scary to me, you know. So but you know, like you said, it's just one of those things. If you want to stay healthy, you know, sometimes you really have to disengage or you have to moderate your social media diet, you know, to say. So you have to be really careful. But with that being said, I would love to close out the show with maybe a song that you could do for us, you know, on your guitar. Any song that you'd like, doesn't have to be from your recent CD, but it'd be nice if it was.
Well, I'll sing When I Get to Berlin for you.
Awesome.
That song sort of surprised me. I was not sure about whether or not it was going to work on the record.
Really? Why?
But I found that it's been getting a really strong response. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to sing it just because it's sort of part of the process of figuring out what it is that people are connecting to. It's a very personal story. And I think that that's probably the largest measure of why it connects with people. I think that when we're making art, like I said, if we're honest with ourselves and we're speaking very directly about our own experience, it resonates with other people because it reminds other people of their own experiences.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily, like me singing a song for you, doesn't make you live in the story that I'm telling you. It makes you discover parts of your own story that you may have forgotten that you find to have emotional weight, which is what I think is so special and so intangible about songwriting and music in general. That's the way you're able to touch people. You know, you don't put a story in their head. You offer them a story that reminds them of some important piece of themselves that they may have forgotten, that they get to then relive or re-experience, which is magic.
Jesse, are you sure that you didn't miss your calling as a philosopher?
Well, I went to school for it for a couple of years, but then I got smart enough to realize I was throwing my money out the window and just bought a bunch of books.
Well, you should at least write a book, you know, on helping people. You have so much wisdom, you know, in your years. I mean, and you're still, you know, relatively a young person, you know. I think you're probably like within my age group, like you were born in the 80s maybe, or early 90s, or
a little earlier than that. I'll let you guess.
I can't. I'm thinking you must be somewhere in the 30s.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll let it be a mystery, man.
All right. Well, that's
fine. I wouldn't tell you the answer.
Okay.
Shared from your plate, you always were late. I'd wait while I poisoned your name. You were never to blame in this game. Well, sorry, my friend. A voice on the phone in the dark of the hotel.
We're crying here.
Man, that was beautiful.
It was so beautiful. Well, I reminded you of somebody that you will call later on this afternoon and talk to.
Yes. Absolutely. Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. Jesse, I really want to appreciate you. I mean, we, you know, again, can't stop gushing over your latest TV. I make a fool. And it's probably sickening by now, but we just love you, CD.
Thank you very much for the compliments, because so often artists feel like they're doing this thing in a vacuum. And to get a little feedback feels really great. So thank you.
Oh, well, you're very welcome.
You're welcome, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I just think it's a matter of time before you just explode and everyone's going to know you're going to be like the, you know, the it, you know, it's like, you know, yeah, it's just a matter of time because it's just the, not only the level of craftsmanship in terms of the musicians, you know, and the arrangements, but it is the lyrical content of your songs. They're just, you know, they're deep, they're thoughtful, they're reflective. You're talking about something, you know,
actually mean something about being pretentious.
Exactly.
That's definitely. Pretension is something that is always, it's dangerous, and you can slide into saying nothing with a whole lot of pretty words really easily.
Yes. I totally agree. And now with this COVID-19 and so many things happening, I mean, I'm wondering what's going to happen to the smaller clubs that usually, you know, give a platform to the independent artists, you know? I mean, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, I don't think, you know, some of them probably won't be able to survive. What do you think?
You know, that's why we're going to see all of the real clubs go out of business through this disaster. And it'll be a couple of years before a whole new crop of clubs will pop back up. You know, people can't stop making music. There's never going to be large amounts of money in it anymore. Like what happened in the 1970s, it's not coming back ever.
Yeah.
But we might be able to, you know, people that want to spend their time doing nothing but playing music are probably going to figure out how to do it at least to break even. Which is what the club owners have always done. It's what the musicians basically have always done. You know, even a band like Heartless Bastards playing to 500-700 people a night, five nights a week, we were breaking even.
Wow.
700 people a night. You know, basically breaking even. And just like when we all took a little bit of money home to pay our bills and our mortgage, there was nothing left over.
Wow, that's amazing, right? Because you never think that. You know, you think, Yeah, I know. Absolutely. So I'm wondering, do you have like any thoughts on how, you know, musicians and bands can move forward? I mean, do you have any ideas on how we will move forward after COVID-19? I mean, just have you ever like really sat down and really just thought about what are some of the possibilities, you know, that might happen?
The one thing that I am sure of is nobody's going to stop making music. Music is fine. The music will not suffer. The music will march forth. The outlets for it will be different. To say what it is? I don't think drive-in movie theaters are instantly going to become like drive-in venues or anything like that. And I would be embarrassed to try to put out any sort of theories, because we're living in an age where things change so quickly and unexpected things happen with such regularity that I kind of just let it go. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. So I'm just going to keep working on writing decent songs and keep my talented friends engaged in the project if I can. And if something good can come from that and we're able to find an outlet, great. You know, if we don't get to play a live show for the next 3 years, hopefully we'll at least get to make another record and throw it up on the streaming service.
No, I hear you. Well, I'm going to let you go because we could certainly talk your ear off. We, again, love your music. Thank you for taking time out today. See, you take care of yourself, and we're connecting with you, and we'll be in touch real soon.
You will.
Speak soon. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.